Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. As of mid-January, about 625,000 people had enrolled with Covered California, the state's new health insurance exchange under the Affordable Care Act. And more than 500,000 people were found eligible for Medi-Cal, California's version of Medicaid, which was expanded as part of the new health care law. It's still early in the game, but these enrollment numbers fall short of what Covered California administrators had originally hoped for. So who actually managed to sign up? Who got left out? Who's getting new care? And who lost the care they relied upon? What's working and what needs more attention? LA Times reporter Chad Terhune writes about the disappointing sign-up rate among Latinos. Young, healthy Californians were also underrepresented in enrollments compared to older age brackets. And for those who did sign up, what success are they having in finding the doctors and the care that they need? San Francisco Chronicle reporter Victoria Colliver found that some people who signed up are now struggling to find doctors who will deliver care under the new plans. Emily Bazar posted a recent column, Ask Emily, and she said, I understand that problems and glitches are inevitable. It wouldn't be fair to expect the rollout to go perfectly, but does it have to be this difficult? So we're going to try and answer that question on today's Your Call, along with who's working to fix the problems in Covered California. Joining us to talk about all of this is Victoria Colliver, who's a journalist who's been writing about health care for the San Francisco Chronicle for more than a decade. She focuses on the healthcare industry, health policy, and cancer. Hi, Victoria.
Hi.
Welcome to Your Call. Emily Bazar is a senior writer with the Center for Health Reporting, and she's based in Sacramento. She also writes a biweekly column, Ask Emily, and it answers readers' questions about the Affordable Care Act. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Holly.
Chad Terhune is joining us from Los Angeles. He's a staff writer for the LA Times, where he covers the healthcare industry. And Chad's been reporting on health insurance, medical costs, and the rollout of the federal healthcare law. Columbia Journalism Review praised his coverage for offering a clear-eyed look at what Obamacare will really mean for consumers and healthcare costs. Hi, Chad.
Thank you for having me, Holly.
Well, let me start with you, Chad, because you're only going to be on with us for a half hour. The big headline yesterday and today was that Obamacare might lead to people quitting their jobs. The Congressional Budget Office put out a report that revised its earlier estimates of about, I think, 600,000 jobs might be lost to now an estimate of more than 2 million full-time workers who might now quit their jobs because they're no longer tied to health care. So can you explain what's actually in this CBO report and what it really means behind these kind of sensational headlines of Obamacare is going to lose jobs for us?
Yes, that's a great question. I'm happy to try to explain that. I think if you look at the report, what it was looking at was people opting on their own voluntarily to work fewer hours. And what would prompt that would be we have the federal premium subsidies as part of the Affordable Care Act. So based on your income on a sliding scale, you would get help from the federal government to buy your health insurance. And obviously, if I keep working more hours, if I make more money, I might get less subsidy. I might actually get to a level where I get no subsidies at all. So the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, saying, look, some people might voluntarily say, look, I'm not going to work quite as much. I might not take that second job. I might not work so many hours. That kind of prices me out of those subsidies because financially that would be counterproductive. And then if you kind of take all those people making that decision, it could be the equivalent of 2 million people. So it's not what some people might think of, oh, these are businesses laying off 2 million people or eliminating those jobs. It's kind of the reverse of people saying, look, in my financial situation, and maybe it doesn't make sense to work those extra 5-10 hours a week.
Well, and just to unpack this a little bit more, so essentially people have more portability now because they're not relying necessarily on their job for their health care, so they have a little bit more choice in the labor market. But I think that I read that that businesses might have an incentive to reduce employee hours to avoid the employer mandate. Is that part of this as well?
Yeah, under the Affordable Care Act, the math is really changing a great deal on employer health insurance. So you're right. We starting in 2015, it got delayed for 1 year. We'll have new requirements on companies that have more than 50 full-time employees that they need to offer health insurance to those people, or they could face a penalty. And for workers, they have a lot of new choices. And you're right, that job lock was often a big problem in the workforce. Many people didn't want to go get another job or, you know, leave their employer because they would lose their health insurance. And that was very valuable if you had a family, you had kids. Health insurance is very expensive. And so now you are basically freed from that in many respects, because now you're guaranteed coverage on the open market, even if you have pre-existing conditions, which was a big problem for many people. So the job lock is going away, but it kind of introduces a whole new math and a whole different equation for many employers and workers.
And for the workers, one of the points of that equation is that if I'm making too much, you know, just a little bit too much to qualify for a subsidy, I might want to try and reduce my income.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us here on the call as reporters, we've heard from these people where they're just over that 400% of the federal poverty line. And that's kind of the magic line where it comes to subsidies, where if you make 400%...
Can you give me an actual number of what that 400% means?
Yeah, so for the average person, that would be about $45,000 a year. If you're a family of four, it's about $94,000. A year, so everybody can kind of think about what you make. So a family that's $94,000, fairly middle class for a single person, you know, that's somebody, you know, a pretty comfortable salary. And it's on a sliding scale, so if you're at that top, if you're somebody making $45,000 a year, you get very little in subsidy. If you make $20,000, $30,000, you obviously get more of a subsidy, more help in your monthly premium. The federal government actually sends the money directly to your insurance company, and you would pay far less. So people who are just over that line, obviously they have to pay the full premium. Some of those people have probably complained the most because they have often seen their premiums go up because they're paying the full price. They're not getting any help through the subsidies.
And let me bring Victoria and Emily into the conversation. We'll start with you, Victoria. So based on what you've been hearing from people and learning through your reporting about Covered California so far, you know, we're a month into actual implementation, actually people having that insurance and being able to supposedly access care. What do you think is working well, and what do you think needs the most urgent attention? And let's start with what's working well from both of you. Go ahead, Victoria.
Well, I do hear from some folks just occasionally letters saying, hey, everything's going smoothly, I didn't have any trouble. But those folks, either they're not writing me or they're relatively few and far between. But there is definitely, I just want to make a nod to that, that there's people who didn't have any trouble signing up. What I'm hearing from still are people who actually are still waiting for their bills or some sort of acknowledgement that they actually have coverage. These are people who selected their plan sometimes even months ago, and they've been caught in this loop where they keep calling and they get put in these long waits, and then they're it just goes on and on, and they feel like, do I have coverage? Do I not have coverage? I don't want to just send some sort of bill into the insurer without some piece of paper attached to it. And then I'm starting to hear, of course, from the second wave. These are like the two waves of people I'm hearing from. Second wave is those folks who actually are starting to use their coverage, and they're having trouble, and that's what you alluded to earlier with the trouble finding doctors and you know, basically hospitals in their network that accept Covered California. And some of these are people who called in advance to check and make sure that their oncologist, someone very important, was in their network.
Yeah, that was somebody, Sue Kearney, or I think was in your recent report.
Yeah, a gastroenterologist that she wanted to see, and basically she double checked in advance when signing up a month or so ago, and got mixed messages. First, you know, she said they're in, then she hears they're not, and some people even get mixed messages from their doctor's office versus what the insurers are telling them, which versus what's on the list in Covered California.
So there's still a lot of confusion.
Definitely.
Emily, what are you hearing? And first, what do you think is actually working well with Covered California?
Yeah, ditto, basically, from what both Victoria and Chad said. I am hearing from some people who are happy with their coverage and with the process. But again, I think they may have less incentive to be in contact with me, because a lot of people basically write to me when they have problems or,
right,
you know, need to get something figured out. So what's working well? Well, a lot of people have been signed up, but that doesn't necessarily mean, as we've all said so far, that they're actually really have insurance or have proof of insurance or can use it somewhere where they want to use it. My inbox is also full of frustrations and complaints from people who are basically in bureaucratic limbo. It's been very difficult for them. They're calling, you know, like Victoria said, I've talked to people who did everything right. They signed up early. They paid their first premium early. And yet, you know, for instance, I've heard from at least three or four people who signed up on Covered California, then either Covered California or their insurance terminated their plan inadvertently. Or I've heard from people who have paid and their checks haven't been cashed, or they have been cashed and they're getting other bills. I'm also hearing from a lot of people on the Medi-Cal side, people who are trying to sign up for Medi-Cal, especially single people or people who don't have children, even if they're not single. Those people are newly eligible for Medi-Cal if their incomes qualify them as of January 1st. But they believe they're newly eligible, yet they're being denied, and they think they're still being subjected to the old rules. I'm hearing from a lot of them as well.
So still a lot of problems even signing up, let alone accessing. And we'll get a little bit more into that in a minute. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We're kind of looking at how Covered California is working so far, about a month into the launch. And we want to invite you to join our conversation. We've already got a lot of callers on the line. How has Covered California been working for you? Are you somebody who became eligible for Medi-Cal and signed up? Have you sought care? We want to hear how it's working for you. And we want to hear your questions about how it should be working, and if you're having any glitches. The number to call is 866-798-TALK. Again, that number is 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I'd like to encourage anybody who's having a good experience, who got new health care coverage and was able to access it under Covered California, maybe just drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you're one of those much-desired young people, did you sign up? Did you decide not to sign up? Let us know why. Again, the number is 866-798-8255. We'll have another open line in just a minute, but you can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And, Victoria, we talked just a little bit about these people who actually, what you say, did everything right. They signed up early. They got their health care coverage. They checked to make sure doctors and care would be there. And now they're having trouble accessing doctors through the new plan. You wrote that in California, plans offered by Blue Shield through Covered California included just 60% of the doctors that participate in the insurer's group plans and only 75% of the hospitals, meaning that you could look and see that Blue Shield has these doctors in their network and these hospitals, but a new plan isn't going to include all of that. Is that about right, Victoria?
It's about right. It's just the idea that Blue Shield, in order to control their costs, created a different network for those network of hospitals and doctors for those plans in the exchange. So sometimes people had, maybe say they were a Blue Shield customer for years, and they had either a different type of policy. They've been always going to Dr. A through, you know, or Hospital X through Blue Shield. They can't expect that to carry over, whether or not they were in an individual or group plan. They just narrowed their networks in an effort to keep their costs lower, and they say that's what's happening. But on the flip side, they're also, you know, they've excluded a large part of the market.
Wasn't this supposed to be one of the things that the ACA was supposed to fix? Kind of substandard healthcare plans, you buying an insurance plan that ultimately...
There's a difference between, like, substandard and completely inadequate. They say that these are adequate networks. They're supposed to achieve a certain level of coverage, and that by the law they do that. But when people try to use them, it's tough, especially if it's, like I said, a long-time doctor or they have a relationship with someone that they want to continue.
Let's just talk about this whole idea of the risk pool. As I understand it, it was important to have a wide risk pool so that you didn't just have the sickest and the oldest and the most in need of healthcare signing up and getting new insurance, but you also had a larger risk pool of so-called younger, healthier people signing up. And so far, Covered California has seen about 625 enrollees plus about nearly 625,000 enrollees, right? Did I say million?
You said 625.
Okay, 625,000 new enrollees in Covered California and about nearly 600,000 new people eligible for the expanded Medi-Cal. But that falls short of the goal that California had. And the highest percentage of enrollees are in older age brackets. And if that continues to be the case, then premiums could go up. So what is Covered California doing to try and remedy that? Why don't we start with you, Victoria?
Covered California, I mean, they've always known that the younger people in who are in different ethnic groups where language may be a problem, may not get the message first, that group of people were always going to be the most difficult to reach, and the first people to sign up would be the people who actually need the plan. So in some ways, that's not exactly a surprise. They just realized they need to make a bigger push for these people, or this trend will continue, and that won't be so sustainable. We still have a little time. We still have till March 31st for people to sign up. So it's not like... once again, the numbers aren't exactly what they want them to be, and they will even admit that.
In Chad, Latino enrollees have been much lower than what they were hoping for. You wrote about this for the LA Times, about 1.2 million people, 46% of the 2.5 million Californians eligible for federal premium subsidies are Latino. But Covered California said this week that only 20% of enrollees through the end of December described themselves as Latino. So what's happening there?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the bigger surprises for the exchange. On the earlier question, I think the young people showing up is not that far off their targets, but the Latinos has been a bit of a head-scratcher, and I think there's many things going on. They didn't have a Spanish paper application until very recently, the first 3 months of enrollment. There's been a shortage of enrollment counselors on the ground. These are the people at clinics and nonprofit groups and, you know, going out in the neighborhoods. And the thought is that many Latinos would like to actually sit down with a live person face-to-face. And, you know, this is a very complicated issue of health insurance, deductibles and copays, a lot of jargon, particularly if you're uninsured. This is kind of a foreign concept. You have an issue of, you know, people who have mixed immigration status in their families. There might be some distrust of, you know, signing up for what looks like a government program, and, you know, you might get an aunt or someone in trouble with immigration. Covered California has gone to great lengths to assure people that no information is shared. Those people would not face any negative consequences, but I think they've had to overcome that obstacle. But, I mean, Covered California has done lots of advertising, lots of marketing, and despite all that, the numbers have remained very low. And I think this is important because it also goes to the young and the healthy, because the Latino obviously include lots of young people and lots of healthy people, so you can kind of cross off all your boxes there if you could reach that audience.
And that's Chad Terhune. He's a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times, where he covers the healthcare industry. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about Covered California and how it's working so far, what needs a remedy, and what is working well. We're speaking with Victoria Colliver, who's a journalist who's been writing about health for the San Francisco Chronicle for more than a decade, and Emily Bazar, who's a senior writer with the Center for Health Reporting, and she writes the biweekly column Ask Emily, which answers questions about the Affordable Care Act. And so let's go to listeners' questions right now. Let's go to Richard in Oakland. Hi, Richard. Welcome to your call. Fine, thanks.
Thank you. Well, I just want to address a fundamental problem. I think the Affordable Care Act is just a clubfoot in the door, opening a way. It's a pared-down plan to enable passage, and we see how difficult passage has been. Even the computer glitch rollout, I think, is attributable to them trying to accommodate a flawed system. There are two major changes that need to be affected with our healthcare system in order for any plan to work. That's number one, eliminating the two-tiered system, ultimately nothing's going to work until we construct an effective single-payer plan, and number two, unlinking health care from employment.
All right, so why don't we hear from our panel, Chad or Emily or Victoria? Do you want to talk about the future of a single-payer system in California? Is that anything that people are talking about with renewed vigor now? Or is it less so?
I haven't heard. I mean, basically, there's always an undercurrent of people who definitely support single payer, and it crops up at certain key points, but politically it's been such a non-starter that it's been really difficult to get a movement going. And you can see this is how this played out, where it's kind of a more of a hodgepodge. It's a growth off our existing system, which arguably you can say is not working very well, and that's just what we could get through. And that is very frustrating to many people, especially those who support a Medicare for All or single-payer type system.
And but has there been a renewed call for single-payer in California? I know that it had been to a vote on numerous occasions here.
I'm in Sacramento. I'm not hearing too much about that. You know, there, as you say, there always are attempts in the legislature, but they don't get very far. Yeah, I don't foresee anything like that anytime soon.
And how does this compare to, say, the institution of Medicaid? Like, are all of these problems to be expected to some degree because you're so revolutionizing an existing system? What's the precedent there? Why don't I go to you, Chad?
Certainly, in terms of the political war over this, it's quite revealing when you look back at the old clips like I did. I just went back, looked at the old LA Times and other newspapers when Medicare was introduced, and you could almost verbatim, same headlines, same congressional, you know, blasting, government takeover, socialized medicine. So that is very spot on. I think we obviously live in a different society today with the Internet, Twitter, people rising up with their anger, hyper-partisan. It's probably even worse, as we all know. But in terms of that, you know, political war, very similar. I think what we're seeing now, though, and I think we've talked about it on the call, just the execution of the Affordable Care Act, the customer service issues, I think those have been maybe worse than expected. And just as inevitably, you know, problems were going to arise, this is just a huge makeover to the insurance market. People were going to fall through the cracks. Problems would happen. But just their ability to reach a live human being on a 1-800 number or online from their insurance company or an exchange to get something pretty simple fixed has been just incredibly hard. There was the one statistic from the exchange in December. Half of all callers just quit. They hung up. They could never get through. Half of all callers. And that's just, you know, one number, but that's just the level of frustration I think a lot of people felt.
Why didn't they roll this out in stages, like people with birth dates between X and X years start first or something along those lines? Chad.
Well, I think in hindsight, perhaps some of that could have been done, but I think politically, you know, the law passed in 2010. A lot of the rules, a lot of the implementation got put off till after the presidential election. You could debate whether that was a good or bad thing. Just lots of things kind of got backdated.
And then,
to California's credit, they were first in line. They set up their state exchange. I think that's one reason
why. And it still had problems. Chad, we're going to a break. I'm very sorry to cut you off. Chad Terhune is a health reporter with the LA Times. I know you need to leave at the break. If you have a minute to stay with us, you can finish your thought after our break. Victoria Colliver is a health reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Emily Bazar is with the Center for Health Reporting. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll be right back.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, the number to call is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email your question or comment to feedback at yourcallradio.com. yourcallradio.org, or just leave a comment on the website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say. That's 30 minutes away here on Local Public Radio.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Today we're talking about, is Covered California working for you? We're discussing the failures and successes of California's new healthcare exchange. Covered California has had more success than some other states, but it still suffers from low enrollment, especially among Latinos and youth. And many clients are having a hard time finding a doctor or a hospital that will take a plan that was purchased through the exchange. So we're asking, how's it working for you? And we're answering all of your questions about how the new law should be working, how it is working. Tomorrow we're going to ask, how are California farmers using water? How are they affected by the drought? And how are they affecting the drought and planning for a drier future? 85% of California's water goes to agriculture in this state. Friday, of course, is our weekly media roundtable. We speak with journalists about the coverage of this week's news. And I will give out the number so that you can join our conversation about Covered California in just a minute. We have full lines right now. We're speaking with Victoria Colliver, who's health reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, Emily Bazar, who's a senior writer with the Center for Health Reporting, and she's the author of a column, Ask Emily, which answers readers' questions about the Affordable Care Act. We're also joined by Chad Terhune, who's a health reporter with the LA Times. And Chad, I know you have to go, but you were kind enough to stay on the line with us for just to finish out your thought before the break about what happens. Why this rollout has been so riddled with problems?
Yeah, just the point I was trying to make, California has had more time than most. They were very early in saying, look, we're going to build our own state exchange. But as you can see, they've had some positive successes. The enrollment has been going fairly well, better than many states. The website, when it launched October 1, actually worked compared to healthcare.gov, but obviously lots of other issues on the execution side still.
And one more quick question for you, Chad. You mentioned that people were confused about how immigration status might affect eligibility for the ACA. Can you just clear that up for us?
Basically, when you sign up for health insurance through the exchange, you obviously have to turn over a lot of personal information, income, tax returns, citizenship status, and only if you are a legal resident can you qualify for the federal premium subsidies. Obviously, you have families that might be mixed immigration status, so the question comes up, well, you know, will I be exposing them to, you know, some negative consequence? And there's been letters issued, notices. The state has tried to publicize those, saying in no way would, you know, going through the application process expose other family members to some immigration action.
Thank you so much for joining us. Chad Terhune is a reporter with the LA Times. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks.
Let's go to more callers. Lee in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Yeah, hello. I want to ask about Healthy San Francisco. My wife is currently on it, and I understand, at least talking to them and even the folks at Healthy San Francisco, are ambiguous. It's going to go away on March 31. And I just need some...
All right, stay on the line, Lee. Let's get Victoria to tell us, how does this affect Healthy SF? What happens after open enrollment ends on March 31st, Victoria?
Well, the folks at Healthy San Francisco, they're assuring people there is a place for us. Partly, as we were just talking about with Chad and the immigration issue, there's nothing in the Affordable Care Act and Cover California that helps people who are not here legally. There's a certain percentage of people that may just be able to opt out of being in Covered California or Medi-Cal and want to stay on Healthy San Francisco. But everyone points out that Healthy San Francisco is not an insurance product. It is a program, a health program, to get coverage within San Francisco. And it's not portable. It lacks a lot of the basic things that people should have with coverage. So if you are eligible, especially if you're eligible for subsidy or you know, alternatively Medi-Cal, that's a better situation for the vast majority of people, though.
So somebody like Lee and his wife, they should sign up for the ACA if they're using Healthy SF as their only source of coverage right now.
That's what they'd be advised, is my understanding. I don't know if Emily knows more about this, too, because she deals with a lot of questions and answers.
Let me ask Lee, since he's still with us, do you feel like your question was fully answered? Oh, we don't have Lee anymore. Emily, anything to add about Healthy SF?
No, I actually don't look into Healthy SF a lot. I'm more California-centric.
Well, let's go to more callers. Mike in King City, who's in his car, has a question for us. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I wanted to share some anecdotal example. I just had a good experience with Covered California. I'm a self-employed financial advisor. It's my background. I have my insurance license. I don't use it that much, but the truth is I pay $230 a month now on my insurance. I have some pre-existing conditions, so that helped me out a lot. I'm no longer at risk of being uninsured. The website and the complexity of it leaves a lot to be desired. I'm going to get specially trained to help with Covered California because I really didn't like the experience as far as confusion, complexity. I think part of that is due to, a big part of it is due to they want to give everyone choices. They want to give lots of choices. To the point where your average individual, I don't know how they navigated the site, honestly. That's my comment.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much for calling in, Mike. Let's go to Andy in Redwood City. Hi, Andy. Welcome to your call.
Hi, Holly. Good morning. Good morning to your guests. I tried accessing the site after Christmas, and I couldn't get it to function properly. It kept going out on me. So luckily, I had attended a seminar held by Senator Jerry Hill and Assemblyman Rich Gordon in Palo Alto, and I had the number for the San Mateo County. So I called them to help me, and they accessed the site, and we found that I didn't qualify because I haven't worked in 4 years. I don't have income coming in, so I have to go to Medicaid. And when we did that, I have a pre-existing condition, so they sent me, I still don't have health care. They've sent me two queries wanting more information about who I am, my passport, my driver's license, and I sent them the first round. Then they came back to me again and told me they want to know what assets I have. And assets are supposed to be exempt.
Right.
In this round. Yet they asked me what assets I had, and I know at the Hill and Gordon seminar they said assets don't matter anymore. They asked me for proof of my assets. I sent that to them, and I haven't heard anything yet.
And you are not supposed to need to do that any longer.
Right.
That is
we
no longer a piece.
We need a single-payer system. The previous caller was correct. That's the only solution. We should get, like the rest of the developed world, single-payer, everybody covered. Otherwise, people with pre-existing conditions like me just run out of assets, and they die.
Well,
this system kills its citizens. It's got to stop. Single-payer. Government's got to run the system. One big health insurance pool. That is the only system that will work. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, and apologies for your frustration. Obviously, a lot of people are sharing that. But let's unpack the two things that Andy talked about. First of all, how Medi-Cal is working and not working, and why is there still so much confusion among the people who are signing people up on the side of Medi-Cal about the old rules versus the new? Emily.
I'm hearing a lot of problems with Medi-Cal signups in two places. It sounds like Andy, if he's still there, didn't sign up through Covered California. Is that correct?
It sounds like it was not through Covered California, but he's no longer with us.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that people who are trying to, you know, when they go to Covered California, either do it online is really what I mean, that they'll get caught in some computer glitches that say something like, you're eligible for Medi-Cal. Would you like to choose your Covered California plan now? So, I mean, they're having problems and are unable to sign up that way. And then people are also having trouble at the county level. Now, counties determine eligibility. And I'm telling your listeners this because, in part, this may be where they can go to get some help, hopefully. County workers can be a resource. Hopefully, I've been told that they've been trained. Obviously, they know the old rules. I've been told they've been trained in the new rules, although some of my readers have told me that they've been denied and believe that they're being subjected to the old rules, as I said. And Andy's right. I mean, the new rules for most applicants, not every single one, but for most applicants, whether or not you own a home, whether or not you own a car, shouldn't matter in terms of your Medi-Cal eligibility. Your income matters. That would be you need to make under 138% of the federal poverty level. And that for an individual, if you could help me with this, I think it's like $15,000,
yeah,
about that.
$15,856
for one person and $32,499 for a family of four.
Right, exactly. So it's income eligibility, and you no longer have to have kids to be eligible. Now, if you're having problems like Andy is, I would suggest a couple of things. Number one, go directly to your county. Try speaking to a live person. See if that helps. I know that doesn't always help. I know county workers are overwhelmed themselves. They're getting hit by thousands and thousands of new applicants, and I think there still is some confusion about the new rule. Here's the second one, though. Let me pass it along to people. There's something called the Health Consumer Alliance, and this is a group. Basically, it is a compilation of groups around the state that help people who are having problems, not only with Covered California, but especially with Medi-Cal. So you can go to their website, which is healthconsumer.org, and you can find your county. Let's look at San Francisco, for instance. Bay Area Legal Aid is the group there to contact. These folks are helping people. They're also SLAM, but they're helping people who are having trouble.
Great. Okay, so that's Health Consumer Alliance. We're going to put links to all of this at yourcallradio.org. You can also continue to post questions there, et cetera, and we'll forward them to our panelists. But one question that comes up for me out of Andy's experience is if you're eligible for Medi-Cal and they ask you for asset proof or proof of your assets, what should you say?
You should contest, you know, they may still ask about it, but it shouldn't be determined in your eligibility. And that's a great question. I can find out. Now, one reason they may be asking about assets is there's a pretty controversial program, and it's called the Estate Recovery Program that Medi-Cal has and has had for a long time, Medicaid. And basically what this is for some people over 55, after they die, the Department of Healthcare Services, which administers Medi-Cal, can try to recoup some of the money they spent on this person if the spouse is no longer alive and if there's no child under 21, and they could go after somebody's home, for instance. So I'm wondering if they're asking for that reason. That program, to the chagrin of many people, remains so far, and I know the federal government may revisit it, but they haven't yet.
And let's get to as many callers as we possibly can before the hour is out. Let's go to Lisa in Oakland. Welcome to your call, Lisa. Lisa, are you there? So Lisa appears not to be with us. Are you there, Lisa? She wanted to hear about cuts in reimbursements to doctors in California under Medi-Cal. Can you talk about that, Victoria?
I mean, Medi-Cal has always been a low payer. There's been it's always been difficult to get doctors to accept Medi-Cal, and the cuts, looming cuts, make it worse. So I don't know what to say to that other than I'm not sure that's changed. There's a certain number of Medi-Cal providers who are just going to do it no matter what, but every time there's talks about cuts, there's talks about fewer and fewer people accepting it.
Another thing that I was reading are people who are eligible for Medi-Cal but actually wanted to purchase insurance, ideally subsidized insurance, and didn't want to get into the Medi-Cal system. They feel stigmatized.
I'm
go ahead.
I'm definitely hearing about those people.
Tell us a little bit about that. Is there an alternative?
Well, if you're qualified for Medi-Cal, you're supposed to go into Medi-Cal, and Emily can talk about this more too, but I think I'm starting to hear from people who maybe they're self-employed, their income seems really low because of the way they structure their business, probably for tax advantage purposes, and they actually are, you know, working people that feel like Medi-Cal is not for them, but the way they have it, you know, according to their taxes, they do qualify on a straight income level.
Could I add something to that?
Yes, please do, and then let's go to more callers.
Yeah, this is a very important point, actually. If you are eligible for Medi-Cal, you are ineligible for tax credits on the exchange. That means that even if you want to buy on the exchange, you can, but you have to pay full price. There's no getting around that. You will not qualify for tax credit. So you could either get free, you know, care through Medi-Cal or pay full cost on the exchange.
So those are your only two options. And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. I'm joined by Victoria Colliver, who's a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's a healthcare reporter. And Emily Bazar, who's a writer with the Center for Health Reporting and the author of the Ask Emily column that answers all of your questions about the Affordable Care Act. And let's get to as many of those questions as we can. We have full lines, but you can send us questions via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. I just want to, before I get to more callers, let me read an email from Kate about single payer. Your guests are wrong about the history of single payer in California. Kate, I think that was my fault. It passed both houses of the legislature twice while Schwarzenegger was in office, and he vetoed it. It was only when Brown came in and said he would sign it that suddenly legislators were too afraid of the insurance industry to pass a single payer bill. Unfortunately, the movement has not kept up the pressure, but if we did, I don't think there's any question it could pass and become law. So another plug for single payer from Kate in San Francisco. Let's go to more callers. Drew in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Hi, I'm going to take you off my headset so we get better voice quality. Hi. So one of the things that I kind of have a sneaky suspicion about is that the insurance companies are actually working to make this not work. I have an example. I'm an individual policy person, and I chose Blue Shield as my provider. Now, before the new year, they had customer service hours that were 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, and then on Saturdays they were also available. But strangely, just as their customer numbers go up after the first of the year because of all the new people because of the Affordable Care Act, suddenly their individual policyholder, firstly, their customer service line phone number changes. Secondly, they reduce the hours to 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Friday and nothing on Saturday. And when you try to call in now, most of the time you get a recording that says, because of Obamacare, our lines are full. Please try calling back again. And then even if you get through that and you get to the phone tree, you end up waiting like 30 or 40 minutes sometimes for a representative. So, you know, why they would actually reduce their customer service capabilities when their customer numbers are going up, that's really suspicious to me.
All right, Drew, let's hear from Victoria and Emily about this question. Why don't you go ahead and stay on the line? I've been asking myself this same question. He seems to say, are insurance companies intentionally trying to sabotage this, even though they're the ones who are getting more customers, et cetera? Emily and Victoria, what do you think about how, you know, the fact that we all knew that more people were coming into this system, why didn't we beef it up?
We're not going to get the insurers to say that.
Yeah, and I mean, gosh, they've got so many new customers, you'd think that they love the thing. But Victoria, is okay if I continue
sure.
here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I find it also baffling, Drew, that their customer service hours are limited. I mean, from my perspective, they should be 24/7 every single day. That has been such a disappointment, as we've all discussed, people calling in and being on hold for hours. I routinely hear from people one guy told me he spends 20 hours a week. One woman told me she spent 60 hours so far. I mean, this is a waste of time for people and money.
Well, can I ask you a question, Emily and Victoria? Can you two write about this and get the healthcare companies on record about why they're not providing more customer service for these new people?
I have.
And what
are
they
saying? I wrote a kind of, my latest column is a case study of a woman who's dealing with exactly this in San Clemente. And she's dealing with Kaiser in her case, but it's not just Kaiser, it's all of them. And Kaiser actually does have a 24/7 number, but it's still jammed. I don't know why they're not hiring more people. They told me, well, tell your readers to call after 5 p.m. on weekdays and on weekends. There's less traffic at that time. But Holly, the woman I talked to in San Clemente, told me, I do call at those hours, and I still can't get through. But I do have a suggestion.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay. I don't know if people are actually getting their, I have two suggestions, if their problem solved this way. But I would suggest people go to the Facebook pages of their insurers and Covered California, because people are having trouble with Covered California as well. Take a look at the comments. It is a recitation of all the problems that people are having. People have been put on to health plans without their permission. They've been billed multiple times or not billed at all, and they're telling it all on the Facebook pages, which is really fascinating and frustrating, you know, to see what people are going through. But the interesting thing is that the insurers are responding. They're telling people, you know, contact us at this number or at this, you know, form, and we will get back to you. I don't know if they are, but that's another venue.
I have heard that people, one woman I talked to said she actually tweeted out her complaints and heard pretty quickly back from an answer.
Exactly. And Twitter is another place. Go to Twitter. Go to Facebook. These companies don't like to be, you know, quote, shamed publicly. Go take it out there. It doesn't make them look good when you have this kind of outpouring of frustration from your own customers.
So start naming names, tweet it out, Facebook it, put it on social media, put your insurance company's name in the headline, and start a movement. Be vocal, you're saying. We have so many emails and callers, we're not going to be able to get to everybody, but let me just try and get to a few. Jane says, having grown up with universal health care, I am mystified by all that I'm hearing about the current debate over health care in the U.S. People having to sign up for health care, who qualifies, who doesn't, marketing, advertising, etc. That's from Jane in Fremont. From Mark, can you quickly summarize how income is calculated? For example, is home equity counted? What about savings? I don't think that counts as income, but why don't you clarify that for me, Victoria?
I'm going to punt that to Emily for a second.
Emily, yeah, punt.
Yeah, that's fine. And I'm going to actually double check on a couple of things. But, okay, the income that's used both for Medi-Cal determinations and for Covered California is called modified adjusted gross income, which is for most people the same thing as adjusted gross income. And what is that? That's a line on your federal income taxes. For most people, it's that. Now, I'm trying to double check. For others, it includes, I'm going to find it right now and read it to you because it's hard to.
All right, so it should be what's in your tax forms. While you're looking for that, because we're running up against the clock here, Emily, and there's so many questions. Let's go to B in Mill Valley. She has another question about income calculation. Go ahead, B. Please be brief.
Yes, I wanted to know if severance pay is included in their calculations and if unemployment is included in the calculations.
Okay, and as Emily is looking that up.
I'm here. I've got it. So, okay, and this is not just a plug for me, but this will get you to some better resources. First off, Google Ask Emily or Emily Bazar and MAGI, M-A-G-I, which is Modified Adjusted Gross Income, and there are a couple of fact sheets I link to in my column that will help you. But, okay, MAGI is Adjusted Gross Income plus Tax-Exempt Social Security Benefits, Tax-Exempt Interest, and Tax-Exempt Foreign Income. Now, there are some sources of income that are not counted. SSI is not counted. Veterans' disability payments are not counted. Workers' comp and child support are not counted. And there's a lot of other things, so go to the column and it'll help you, but that's an overview.
And we're going to have links to all of that at yourcallradio.org. That's yourcallradio.org. And you can continue to post your questions and resources that you want other listeners to have. Any thoughts on how people can mobilize to fix these problems? Mark emailed us and said, can you quickly summarize how low income is calculated? Are savings included in that? Did I already read Mark's? I'm sorry.
Yes,
I think I did. Luann asks, or Shannon says, does Covered California include severance
pay? She already asked that. Luann, my 31-year-old daughter was able to sign up for Kaiser Silver Plan for $87 a month. Her dad and I are actually paying that premium for our peace of mind. The past 8 years after coming off our family plan, she's had to rely on Planned Parenthood and ER, so they're happy with the fact that they can get coverage for their daughter through Covered California. And my husband and I have a regular group of health insurance that we've had for several years. Every single year I have to check out the plans offered during open season and have had to deal with insurers withdrawing, et cetera, et cetera. The nature of delivering health care through insurance companies is a problem. Another person saying that maybe this is not the best way to deliver health care coverage. We just have 2 minutes left in the program. What happens when open enrollment ends on March 31st, Emily?
You won't be able to sign up for insurance until the next open enrollment.
So which is when?
The next open enrollment is October 15th through December 7th. That is the same open enrollment as Medicare. So I would suggest doing it, otherwise you're stuck. And if something happens, you'll be responsible for the bills.
And, Victoria, your last thoughts in 30 seconds.
Oh, my last thoughts in 30 seconds.
Yeah, what should people do who are having all of these questions and these problems?
Well, one of the things I also wanted to, that wasn't really pointed out, is that Covered California is there for people with the subsidies. There's a whole swath of people who don't qualify for subsidies, and they're having some similar problems buying individual coverage outside the exchange. That's they have a few more options. I just wanted to point that out because I felt like it was a little bit overlooked.
Outside of the exchange.
We're generally seeing rates still going up, and that is a little frustrating. I'm hearing more and more from people, no matter what, whether it's group insurance or individuals, they're still seeing that increase.
Still seeing increases in premiums. And we're going to have to leave it there. I apologize. We will continue to cover this regularly on Your Call, and we'll have both of you back. We've been speaking with Victoria Colliver, health reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Emily Bazar is senior writer with the Center for Health Reporting, and her column is Ask Emily. We'll put a link to it at yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How do California farms use water? On the next Your Call, we'll continue our series of discussions about California's current drought by looking at how agriculture uses and manages water. Nearly 85% of the state's developed water goes toward agriculture, which is 10 million acres of irrigated farmland. How is that changing in the face of the drought? How can we prepare for a drier future without hurting this critical sector of the California economy? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. We'll be right back.